Yeah, here we go now, baby. Right back into the action for another day of the week. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Before You Bet, Aaron, live right now on the Covers YouTube and X channels. If you're on YouTube, smash that like and subscribe button right down there. So a great big show planned for you guys today. John Middlecoff will be by in a matter of seconds for our weekly chat on all the big stories in the NFL. Hey, we got a game five in the World Series tonight. The Yankees showed some balls, so it's not going to be a complete dud for World Series. Nice looking pitching matchup tonight. So we'll break that down from a betting perspective. And we got a full board in the NBA. John Mettler and I have six total bets across the NBA. Off to a good start from a betting perspective in the association. Okay, if you guys want to participate in the show, very easy to do so. Hit up that live chat on YouTube, on X. What do you like in the World Series game? What do you like in week nine of the NFL season? What do you like in the NBA? Drop some of your best bets. Tell us why you're betting them, and we will read a few off throughout the course of the show. Okay, let's go to our guy down in Arizona, John Middlecoff. John, how are we making out?
You know, I'm doing pretty good. I'm a Northern California guy, so I grew up on the Giants, the 49ers, grew up around Sacramento, but love the Warriors. And it pains me to see the Dodgers and the Lakers look so good. I mean, the Dodgers, it would be, I mean, the biggest collapse in the history of the sport, right? Because, I mean, even the Red Sox came back, but that was in the CS, not the World Series. And the Lakers, I mean, I hate them with a passion, but, man, Anthony Davis looks like Will Chamberlain right now, doesn't he?
Yeah, Anthony Davis is looking good. The Dodgers are looking good, too. You know, you can't really knock them for losing a game in the World Series. They're up 3-1. It was a bullpen game. They did get off to a good start. It looked like they were going to roll with Freeman going yard there in the first inning, but it wasn't to be. So, I'm sure Fox is happy to be getting another World Series game. These games doing really good ratings.
They outdrew Monday Night Football. Now, granted, the Giants aren't very
Giants
good, but still.
Steelers, yeah. Still, though, that's a big deal. Okay, so let's talk a little NFL. I have a Giants question for you in a matter of moments. Let's start with the Philadelphia Eagles, though. So we know the Eagles, the story of this team last season, the wheels completely fell off in the second half. They showed some shades of that this season. You know, Sirianni jawing with the fans at home, a couple ugly losses. But still, pull back. They're 5-2. They look pretty good the past 2 weeks. They outscored their last two opponents 65-20. Plus 700 to win the NFC. So do you think that they've turned a little bit of a page? Should we take this team seriously as a contender in the NFC?
Well, I took them seriously to start the season just because the talent on their team is undeniable. And especially offensively, you see that. When the two receivers are in, Jalen's playing well. You know, he throws the deep ball with a ton of confidence. Saquon is, you know, like Derrick Henry, have helped change their offenses. He looks exceptional. Goddard's been hurt, so when he comes back, their offense is just pretty special talent-wise, and they were missing their left tackle last week. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's an impressive two-game stretch. Now, I also think you have to put it into context, right? They play the Giants, who, I mean, right now, what's their over-under on wins? I mean, it feels like 4.5, and I think you feel pretty good, probably, you know, like a 4-win team. And the Bengals, who in theory should be good, are not. So now, you know, when you're the Bears, remember they had the stretch where they played a couple bad teams. They played the Jags and they played Carolina and they blew them out. You get credit for that because it's like you haven't proven anything. You haven't been in the playoffs in a while. Beating bad teams is a big step. When you're the Eagles, it's like obviously you want to win games, but you don't get extra credit like some of these teams. You know, the Chiefs don't get credit if they blow a bad team out by 20 points. Like, they just work the Raiders. Like, of course. So, it's a positive step, but the elephant in the room is always going to be, you know, their head coach. And I was talking about this on the podcast yesterday. You know, the Cowboys clearly are headed for, 7-10 type season. So, it's been the Eagles versus the Cowboys for the last 3 years for that division, right? It's been those two teams. The Giants, they had the 1 year, but they won 9 games, and they got destroyed when they played the Cowboys, definitely the Eagles that year. So they haven't really been a factor, and Washington has sucked. Well, now that's flip-flopped, so you got Washington, but their roster, I think we would universally agree, you get Adam Peters on the phone, he would agree, their roster isn't as good as the Eagles. But you go, our quarterback, like, I know he's a rookie, is really good, And on a given game, like he can play with Jalen or outplay him. And our coach, like I think one thing we're seeing with Dan Quinn, like pretty good coach. You know, I mean, he had a lot of success, really high level guy. Sometimes that the retread word to me is usually a signal for a bad coach. Some guys just get second jobs, right? Like, and is Andy Reid a retread or did he just get a second job? Like when Bill Belichick gets hired, is he a retread or is he just getting a second job? Like people get fired in football.
Yeah.
It happens. So I think that's going to be fascinating because when those two teams play, assuming Washington just holds serve and they have very similar records within a game or the same record, all the pressure is going to be on the Philadelphia Eagles, right?
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk another team in the division in the NFC East here, the New York Giants. I wouldn't really say that they're flying under the radar, but the other team in the city, the New York Jets, is stealing all the spotlight here, obviously. But the Giants have been really bad here. So 2-6 to start the season, 18 points or less on 6 occasions, 7 points or less 3 times already this season. Everyone always wants to point the finger at Daniel Jones. This guy sucks. He stinks. We've known that for 3 years. So do you think Jones gets too much of the blame? And shouldn't the head coach and GM maybe be a bit concerned about job security at this point?
Yeah, to me, it's all under the same umbrella. I think the hard part with Daniel Jones is like how much did the owner influence that signing and force them to kind of do what they ended up doing? Because you're right. Like at this point in time, he should be a backup quarterback who would be, I would say, the most sought after backup quarterback in the NFL. And their team just isn't very good. It was like, and I know the analytical rule, when you're down 2 touchdowns, you go for 2. And I would say if you're a good team, 100%, right? The Eagles, the Niners, the Chiefs, whatever. This team leading into that game had scored 10 points in 2 games. Like tying the game late against a good team is a huge accomplishment. And I just think you watch this team, they have no cohesion on offense. The young running backs are actually making some plays. But defensively, they can't cover anybody. They are so predicated on their defensive line, which, you know, Burns looks good. Obviously, Dexter Lawrence is a special player. But it's just not a very good roster. It simply is not. And, you know, I know he gave them that vote of confidence, which usually historically is not a great sign for just coaches in general. Because one, when you're getting asked about it, there's a reason. And two, it's like, what are you supposed to say? And the middle of October. Yeah, these guys stink. I think it's very, very difficult for any human being that watched that Hard Knocks to get that out of their head. And like I was, you know, I worked in the NFL, so I saw how it worked. But even if you hadn't, I think it's pretty clear you can be sitting on your couch and going like, I don't think it's supposed to feel like this. He's like, well, who do you want to sign, Dames? I mean, like 2 days. And I remember having people in the NFL tell me it's like two things can be true. Either they're kind of playing it up for the cameras, but in what world would they feel comfortable letting that out for their peers or their owner? Like was adamant because they have final approval, right, of what's allowed. Yeah. Like their owner kind of wanted that out. Like, and I'm not even talking about his comments with Saquon, just how like willy nilly they were with like, yeah, let's just do this. Let's just do that. It's like, it felt like it wasn't some big picture vision. And they like you watch these good teams, the Ravens, you know, for years now, the Chiefs, you know, for the last 10 years, the Steelers for decades, it feels like they have a pretty good idea, you know, what they're attacking. And it feels like the Giants are just kind of throwing darts at a dartboard, hoping to hit a couple. Even if you go, well, yeah, Saquon doesn't make that much sense on it. Okay, I totally agree, you know, big picture. But he also, when you factor in like, wait, the Eagles gave him less than $30 million guaranteed. It's like, it's not like he costs a lot. Now, clearly he wouldn't have taken that contract from you and it had gotten weird, but that's all because of the poor planning years before. So I just think the Giants internally are a mess. And I actually think Daboll, like when you watch them play, calls some decent plays. Their offensive line breaks down a lot and their quarterback misses wide receivers. But you saw Monday night really into the game. Like, and that happens with bad teams. They get, you know, they try really hard on Monday Night Football, yeah, obviously for their owner, their fans. And it's a big deal. I mean, everyone's watching you. So, but they're just simply not good enough. Not even close.
Okay, so we took the week off last week from talking about the Jets, but I got to throw something at you here today. A bit of a your take on my take type of thing here. So I think the best case scenario for the Jets would actually be to get even worse than they are now this season and end up with a high draft pick, because I envision the possibility that, hey, maybe they're half decent here in the second half of the season. Maybe Rodgers and Davante Adams get some real chemistry going. Maybe they have a marquee win or two, and they enter the offseason with a little bit of optimism, and then they say, we're going to run this back. And if they run this back, it's probably going to be an even bigger disaster than it is now.
Yeah.
What do you think of that take? Best case scenario is they get worse than they actually are now.
Well, you know, tanking in the NFL never happens really till maybe like the last week. Even, you know, the dude on Miami, you know, tried to pay Flores and he like refused, and they won what, three of their last five games, and it cost him Joe Burrow.
Yes.
So like every team tries, because the majority of your roster isn't, you know, on long-term guaranteed contracts. So you can be cut at any moment. They might just lose a lot because their coaching staff is horrendous. Right. And that's one thing we're learning, and using that Washington team as an example, like their roster, they shouldn't be this good. Like even against the Bears, they shouldn't have dominated that whole game. Like if you could choose one of the rosters, everyone in the league would choose the Bears rosters if you just had to run a football team. But coaching really matters. And it's not, I'm not even just talking like the scheme, the right coverage to call, or the right offense. I'm talking Monday through Friday, the leadership, the vision, the discipline, what's expected of you. And so to me, like one thing we learned on Sunday when the Jets lost is they are liable to lose any game. And this is what I thought like 3 weeks ago. It's like, oh, they're still okay. Look at their schedule. In what world have they proved anything to feel good about wins? Now, I would imagine most people, including Patriot fans, never thought the Patriots were going to drive the field and score a touchdown. Like that was, I mean, it was crazy that they were in the game, but that was alarming. I was like, yeah, this, they probably end up with like a turnover on downs at midfield.
Yeah.
And then when they drove the field, that had to be the nail of the coffin for any human being that was like, yeah, this team can lose to anyone at any moment. Short week, Thursday, even a banged up Houston team. Like, think about the advantage Houston has. Their coach is, I mean, what's the gap between D'Amico Ryans right now and his staff relative to the Jets? It's really, really wide. And Aaron Rodgers is just kind of an average, meh player. Now, C.J. Stroud's been up and down. Part of it is he's getting running for his life. He's getting peppered. But, like, how could you feel good even on the crazy short week and you're at home? I don't know. I don't feel good about it. The other thing is when you do these mercenary-type teams in football, it's like who's really fighting for who? You saw that last game, Hassan Reddick, and this was part of the knock on him in Philly even when he was productive. Like, he's kind of a sack hunter, which in theory is good. Like, oh, he wants sacks. Well, yeah, it screws up your defense a lot when he's just flying up the field and Jacoby Brissett can run like he's Cam Newton in his prime. I mean, that's because the other guy's 15 yards up the field. That's not what you're supposed to do. But it's like, well, he just hunts sacks, and two, he just showed up. He barely even knows any of these guys. Why does he care? He's trying to get his money.
My Dolphins bring me down, but those Jets bring me up. I cannot believe Jacoby Brissett, a game-winning touchdown drive. I could have seen a game-winning field goal, but a game-winning, they punched it in, man. Beautiful. So, my Dolphins, I got to ask you, Mike McDaniel, this guy appears to have just completely folded. He is awful at responding to any type of adversity whatsoever. They had a lead in that game at home. Now,
big lead. I mean, weren't they up 10-plus points in the second half?
They were up double digits by 10 points. Now, we saw last time around with the last regime, Brian Flores, he got canned. He didn't get the Dolphins into the playoffs, but I believe he had 2-9-8 seasons in his last two seasons in Miami. Now, he was a complete hard ass. A lot of people in the building didn't like him, from Tua all the way to the janitorial staff, from what I heard, and he couldn't really manage an offense either. But we saw the owner, this guy wants to win. He's got a lot of money. Could Miami start over at head coach potentially here?
Didn't they just give him an extension?
They did.
Not that, you know, in this modern day NFL with how much money these people are making, I think that clearly has way less meaning than it would have 10, 15, 20 years ago in the history of sports. Extensions are just, you know, basically golden parachutes for these guys. Yeah. I think if you wanted to use the Flores comp, the crazy part about Flores was like his inability. I remember talking to coaches, and it was like the offensive staff wants to jump off a bridge. So he was awful with the quarterback, awful with the offensive staff, which in a modern day NFL kind of matters. But no one ever disputed, and he's proven this in Minnesota, like he's a big-time elite defensive coach. And his defenses were really good in Miami. Well, if you look at Mike McDaniel, it's like, oh, he's a nicer guy. People get along with him. But he's good on offense. When Tua's on the field, they are a credible NFL team. Like it was, even though we all knew this was coming, watching them, like they were like Carolina Panthers on offense without Tua. And then you get him back, you're like, okay, it's a real offense. But his defense is horrendous. And there's a softness to the team. So it kind of parallels Brian Flores. It's just the opposite. One guy was really good with the defense. His offense knew nothing about him and felt like he hated it. Mike McDaniel probably doesn't hate the defense, but knows nothing about it. And he's just not a tough guy. I mean, look at him. So it's like his team's really, really soft. I also thought, you know, this is why I was down on them to begin with, because of their cap situation. And even McDaniel in the offseason, I remember him talking about it in a press conference, like maybe it was at the combine, like they were going to lose people. They lose their best defensive player, the defensive lineman who goes to the Raiders, who obviously is hurt now for the season or whatever. Yeah. And Flores took Van Ginkle, was a really good. I mean, they just, so their personnel is way worse. And I just think offensively or defensively, their coach, like that's, he's thinking about scoring points and throwing bombs 7 days a week.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. I don't think this approach from the head coach works in that environment in Miami. Like you look at the Miami Heat. They talk about heat culture. It's a defensive-oriented team. They're not out there throwing up a million three-pointers. They work the guys hard. You got Pat Riley, who's going to be holding these guys accountable. So you almost need a hard ass, I think, to run this team in that environment. Flores was the hard ass, but it was too much of a hard ass, right? So if they do switch things up, I think
I know a lot of people have theorized that, like, in this modern-day internet era, with the amount of money all these guys are making, that it might just be borderline impossible. Because the difference between college, like you can win at the University of Miami. I think, you know, he's recruiting so well. You can control their lives so much more. In the NFL, you sneaky have a lot of free time, you know, and you have, now you're getting paid in college too, but a ton of disposable income. It's just it's a tough, tough place. You know, because ultimately, like Las Vegas, well, it's like, are guys just going to go to the casinos nonstop? It's not as crazy as when you say it out. Like Miami is, it's got it all. And it's like New York, city that never sleeps. But in New York, for example, guys aren't living in downtown Manhattan, right? Yeah. They're living in the suburbs. Where in Miami, you're kind of in the mix of everything. And I think we have a long track record now of like, they do have a lot of obstacles to overcome. And I don't know what the balance is, like a Saban Flores or some willy-nilly Mike McDaniel. I don't know. Like if you just gave them Sean McVay or Kyle Shanahan, I think we agree they would be better. But could you build what those guys have built? I don't know.
Those women down in Miami will get any of these guys into trouble. Okay, so we're at the midpoint of the season here, John. we're at the midpoint of the season here. Still a long way to go in the regular season. So who's a team or two teams that you think who have maybe flied under the radar or who have underperformed that you think can make some noise here in the second half of the season?
Well, after I know the score was close, but they were up 27-10 in that game, killing the Cowboys again. They've had a weird season. I mean, weird, I don't even think is the proper way to describe what the 49ers have gone through. Even yesterday, just a devastating story, which Charvarius Ward, his daughter passed away, who's 1 year old. And it's just somehow, the wheels could have fallen off and this team could have imploded. Well, they go 4-4 into the bye. Coming out, they get Tampa Bay, who I'm pretty sure plays the Chiefs this week, who's obviously in shambles. And they potentially get Christian McCaffrey back. And so you get, of all the things that could happen, unless like Myles Garrett or Max Crosby is traded, and it doesn't look like either guy is going to get traded. Definitely Max Crosby. I mean, the owner said no. That's by far the best trade deadline acquisition you can make. If Christian McCaffrey just shows up and looks, I don't know, 80%+ of what he normally is. And the next 2 weeks is Tampa and Seattle, the 49ers own Seattle, all of a sudden we could look up and the 49ers are 6-4 and they got their, you know, you could argue Trent Williams, their best player, but one of their best players back, and Drake Greenlaw is trending to come back, and you start going, well, you know, they're not going to be the number one seed this year, but this is a team that's proven they can win at home. They can win it on the road. Kyle Shanahan has won a ton. I mean, honestly, the only team that he can't beat in the playoffs is the Chiefs, which he's definitely not alone under there. So to me, the 49ers are just a team that has the upside to like go far. You know, you would not be shocked if they beat, I mean, hell, they, I mean, the two teams that I think a lot of people, assuming Jordan Love, will find out as the week goes on what his status is. But if he's healthy down the stretch, like the Packers are Super Bowl contender. I would say the Lions right now are the NFC favorite. Well, the 49ers beat those two teams. And Kyle's comfortable playing, you know, and the 49ers play the Lions toward the end of the season this year. The other team would probably, you know, listen, the Colts, the way they looked against Houston, I mean, Jonathan Taylor looked fantastic. Their defense isn't the most talented, but it was flying around. And listen, there's a lot going on with Anthony Richardson, poor play, tapping out. You saw him against your team. It's just hard to win with the guy. And Flacco just, I think they win that game with Flacco, assuming he played like he's played earlier in the season and then with the Cleveland Browns. And all of a sudden it's like, you know, the Colts are a pretty solid team. And like, they didn't have a choice to make this move, but like if Flacco just plays solid football, they're going to be a wild card team, you know, especially when you look at their division. So I think the Colts, their upside isn't like the Niners. Like the Niners can beat anyone in the playoffs. I don't think the Colts can. But you make the playoffs, if you're the Colts, you're stealing a spot from someone, some big name team. Like, does that mean Denver, the Chargers, or you know, who knows how this shakes out? I guess the only two teams you feel really strongly about both making it right in their, you know, a team to win the division and also make a wild card would be the Ravens and the Steelers. I think those two teams are in.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, you know, Chargers could lose to anybody. The Broncos have a tough stretch coming up. So I think the Colts and the Houston Texans, assuming the Colts get solid quarterback play now, are going to be two playoff teams as well, right? Are you in agreement there?
Yeah. I mean, my big thing about the AFC is that there are teams that we expected to be in the mix, like the Dolphins and the Jets, to at least be playing 500 football.
And yeah, in the wild card mix in December, for sure. They're done.
Yeah, it doesn't look like they're going to be there. So even a team like, you know, I don't know if we should fully – people kind of still like the Bengals. People aren't giving up on the Bengals yet, right? They have these
Their defense stinks, and their offense just – if it's a little off, they got no shot. If Burrow turns it over once, they just got no shot. Like I was into the Bengals too. I'm like, okay, you start looking at their record. They beat the Eagles, tie game at halftime. They had kind of outplayed the Eagles, I thought, in the first half. Up until that last drive that they tied it with on the tush push. And you're like, 10-10, God, if the Bengals win this game, all of a sudden we're going to be like, keep an eye. And then to get work like that in the second half, it's like, I'm out. Because they have proven this year that you just cannot trust them. You cannot. Now, Burrow on given drives looks like one of the best players in the league. And Jamar is really kind of awoke after the slow start, but I'm out. Like I couldn't pick them. I mean, the Bills are going to win that division. Luckily for them, they'll still have the, you know, playing for seeding and trying. I mean, if you know, the Chiefs can stumble and they can get the number one seed, that would be huge. Even getting the two seed, because that gives you a home game in the second round. But I mean, that division could be over by like, as everyone's sitting down for Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah, the AFC East very ugly this year. Absolutely. Okay, John, let's get into a couple best bets here. We have three per usual, and we're going to start with the Cardinals coming off of that nice win in Miami, comeback win, taking on a Chicago Bears team who's coming off maybe the most embarrassing loss of the entire season. And you like the Cards favored by one.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Cardinals coaching staff has done a really, really good job. And this is where, like, you know, Kyler's a better player right now than Caleb Williams. I think no one's disagreeing with it, you know, if you make that argument. And I watching the Cardinals play this year, one, their effort, because their talent, like the Bears roster is better top to bottom. But the Bears coming off that devastating loss, I do not trust their coaching staff. To me, there's just value here. It'd be one thing if like the Cardinals were a three-point favorite at home. But coming, I mean, it's a long flight. 3 hours, you know, you kind of got to lick your wounds. Everyone's been making fun of you. And I just think the Cardinals are a very tricky team to play. You saw it. You've seen it multiple times this year and definitely toward the end of the year last year when Kyler led them back against the Eagles. Even if they're down, he is an incredible comeback player. And I just don't trust this Bears offense. Just looks so bad to start games. Their offensive line's a huge question mark. I don't know. I just think I don't know quite where I stand on the Cardinals. Like, I don't think they're going to be a playoff team. But the more and more I think about them, like, it's not going to shock me if they're in that mix with a couple weeks to go, because it's a little like Lamar. There's just no way to prepare for that guy throughout the week. And then they have a really good physical running back, excellent tight end. You know, Marvin's clearly a really talented player. They have some other weapons, like Dortch makes some plays. And defensively, they're just well-coached. They don't quit. They do not quit. Now, the one thing that makes me nervous, having living down here, there are a lot of Midwest people here. My guess would be, if the Bears had won in Washington, it'd be like 80% mm-hmm. Bears fans. Wow. I think it's going to be a pretty big Bears turnout. But, yeah, I'm just kind of shorting the Bears off that moment.
Yeah, pretty inconsistent, that offense, especially when they go on the road. I know they had a good game in London, but if you look at their other road games this season, the offense quite simply has not shown up. Okay, Jaguars, maybe not a whole lot of people lining up to bet them this week. You are, though. You're taking them. They're a 7.5-point underdog in Philly, taking on the Eagles.
I think it's a lot of points. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not some Jags believer, but I think this line, even with the Jags playing poor, like, the Jags record's terrible, but when you watch them play, they are way better than the Titans, you know, than the Panthers, than some of these teams that don't have a pulse. I mean, I thought they were pretty admirable against the Packers in that game. Now, Christian Kirk breaks his collarbone, which is devastating twofold for them, right? They lose a player that they really need, and they're probably going to flip him for like a fourth-round pick. So that sucks, which makes me a little nervous, but I just think that's a lot of points. I mean, a couple weeks ago when the Eagles were struggling, this line? 4.5, 5. I mean, you're probably getting an extra couple free points and just over the field goal. You saw last week. I mean, the Jags can mount some drives and score some points late. Are the Eagles just now going to blow everyone out? You know, I this is strictly a value play, kind of shorting where everyone's all, oh, this is a blowout. Like, that's not usually the way the NFL works. So, not a Jaguars believer by any means. This is strictly, that number jumped out to me probably more than any this week of just like, damn, that's 7.5. Yeah. that's a big number for a team that, I mean, I'm not a Trevor Lawrence guy, but he's actually probably been a little bit better than all the criticism. Even last week, I mean, it's like, what are you doing? Because Jordan Love turned it over, then he turns it right back over. It's like, how did this happen?
Can't catch a break, right on. Okay, so we have another underdog here. A bit of a murky quarterback situation for the Packers. We don't know if Jordan Love is going to play. As a result of that, they're a +3.5-point underdog at home. Of course, the Lions in town. Now, I looked this up, John. Amazing trend. The Packers as an underdog of 3 or more under Matt LaFleur, who started coaching the team in 2019, 17-4 against the spread.
He's like the NFC Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, most of those games were on the road, and this one is at home here against the Lions. Why do you like the Packers to cover the number?
I would say a little like the Jags. This number just stood out to me. I mean, obviously, this line would be, if this was in Detroit, be an automatic stay away for me. I don't even, regardless who the quarterback is, it'd be a weird situation. The number would be much bigger. You're getting 3.5 points at Lambeau Field. You know, and the Lions are kind of feeling themselves. I still think their defense has some question marks. I mean, you weren't going to see it against the Tennessee Titans. I mean, you'll never see in the history of the NFL again a team score 52 points in their quarterback throw for under 90 yards. I mean, that's an all-time outlier situation. So I think if you remove that game, LaFleur has proven like he can mucky up the game if he has to play with Malik Willis, who has been a revelation. I mean, it's been one of the... To me, it's like it's crowning achievement so far as a coach, even against the Jags. You know, they needed him to win, right? The game was tied, drove him down. Clearly, he's calmed him down. Their defense has been way better. You know, Jeff Hafley, I wouldn't say he's, you know, Bill Belichick in his prime, but they definitely tackle way better. They just feel like a much more buttoned up unit. They used to blow so many coverages. All right, to me, this is also a little like the Jags, just a huge value play. How often are you going to get, even with the question mark at quarterback, but they've already proven like they're comfortable playing with that guy. Now, this is a different level of opponent, but I just think that number at Lambeau Field, you know, their offense is just loaded with players. You can slow down the game, run it with Josh Jacobs. And I just think LaFleur, you know, Dan Campbell, the Lions coaching staff, typically has advantages over most teams they play. You just got to advantage the Lions coaching staff. This is, I mean, at most a wash, right? So it's like I just feel comfortable getting points at home. This is kind of like where the Steelers have been for a decade plus, right? Just an automatic spot for them.
Okay, John, before you go, Halloween is tomorrow. What are the top three things you can get as a trick-or-treater on Halloween?
You know, I was thinking about this the other day. I equate in my mind the Snickers Mini or the Reese's Mini or the Milky Way Mini. It takes, I don't know, 25 of those to equal the actual candy. And then you do the math, you're like, it probably only takes like four or five. I think number one for me, oh, let's go three. I think Reese's Pieces is something no one ever complains about.
Yeah.
I think, listen, this is a personal choice. I love peanut M&Ms. I mean, I could eat hundreds of peanut M&Ms at any moment, any time of day. And to me, I'm a caramel guy. So to me, the Milky Way is probably my favorite candy of all time. You know, the Rolo is really good, but something about that Milky Way, I feel like the chocolate's a little bit better. So I'd have to go with the Milky Way. Reese's Pieces is the old reliable. M&M's, you know, probably a little off the beaten path, personal favorite, but Milky Way's hard to beat.
Now, you grew up in California, right, on the West Coast. I grew up in St. John, New Brunswick. We couldn't have grown up much further apart. So I think Halloween's probably pretty similar, no matter where you go in North America, though. What was a standard worst thing that you would get coming up that you would think, maybe not you, maybe some other kids, that say that house is getting an egg later?
That's a good question. Honestly, maybe times have changed. I mean, I was trick-or-treating in the late 80s, early 90s. You were not getting, like, people handing you apples back then. I don't even think calories were on the candy bar. Yeah. So I don't have kids yet, so I don't quite know the new vibes. I hate Kit Kats. Like I would say just bad candies you don't like.
Yeah.
Sucked. And listen, as Halloween, like do you have kids?
I do. I got two little boys.
Has it changed from when you were a kid in terms of what's given out?
People are a little bit more generous now. Usually like with the mini chocolate bars, they give you big handfuls of them if you go to the right spots, right?
Yeah, we see. I felt like it was very, very rare to get either the full candy bar or have people that weren't being a little frugal with their handouts. Whenever a guy you knew would just either have the big ones or just let you take as much as you wanted, you might do two loops to their pad.
Yeah, we had a house in our neighborhood, and I'm not shitting you, they would give out toothbrushes and many things of toothbrushes. Which maybe some parents might have appreciated, maybe, but you would have the house. I would give cans of soda, the Coca-Cola. It was a guy we specifically knew, he worked for Pepsi. So you'd hit his house two or three times. And you get the rare house. I would give out the big chocolate bars too. But you get people sometimes giving out raisins and peanuts and stuff like that. You know, stick to chocolate, candy.
Or just turn your lights off and don't give anything out. Like to me, that's not like, come on. We all know the toothbrush thing. Think how stupid that is. Like all these kids at their houses have toothbrushes. They don't need a toothbrush. Like this is, parents aren't just feeding their kids candy nonstop. This is a unique event that's very fun. So like, let's not take the fun out of Halloween.
It's one of the greatest traditions we have within society. I think kids absolutely love it. It's a blast when you're an adult, you get drunk and dress up, it's great.
It's like the 4th of July, but the kids get to partake in it, I would say, a little bit more because of the Halloween. It's probably the one holiday, like you said, that really brings them both together, because a lot of the other ones, it's like a little kid's table. They don't even care about eating. This is one that everyone just has a good time. And it's a very, very communal event, right?
Indeed, we can bring all the people together, both sides of the aisle can get together here on Halloween in the thick of the election season here. All right, John, we will leave it at that. Best of luck with all your coverage this week. Best of luck with your bets and have a happy Halloween.
Adios.
Yes, sir, right there. That guy knows his Halloween candy. Okay, let's shift gears here, talk a little World Series, talk a little NBA. Let's bring in our guy, the Magic Ass Man, representing his Orlando Magic, John Mettler. John, how are we making out?
Good. You invoked a lot of emotions in me talking there about the Halloween. I got to go with John Middlecoff. Are we going to do this later? Are we going to give it our
time? Might as well do it now. We're talking about it. That's
good. I was going to say I'm number one Milky Way. That's a Mars bar in Canada, by the way. Mars bar Milky Way. That's the version of the state. So he was number one Milky Way. I'm also number one Milky Way. I 100% agree with him.
I like Snickers and Twix. You get the little things of Skittles. Just a small little pouch and you just rip it open and throw them all in your mouth. That's not bad. Now, in my neck of the woods, I don't know if it's like this in the US, but we get a lot of like mini bags of chips.
Okay.
And they're fine, but 80% of the little bags of chips you're going to get are just plain chips. Not much variety typically. I don't know if it was like that for you growing up. I give out chocolate bars at my house, but.
Yeah, we give out chocolate too. I will say plus EV play if you're a kid and you're watching this. One of my friends for like 6-7 years in a row went as a hockey ref because he can wear rollerblades and hit more houses. That's a power move because he was just going 10 times faster than everyone else. So
it could be a little sketchy though, and depending on the front steps that you have to walk up here.
That's cool.
Okay, let's talk a little baseball. Let's talk a little NBA. Let's start with game five of the World Series. So World Series, not going to be a complete dud. The Yankees, their backs up against the walls, you know, up against the wall. They could have folded last night. They go down early 2-0, and then they fight back. You got to give a lot of credit to their offense in that one. Their fans tried to get involved, trying to yank the ball out of Mookie. That was a bit aggressive, kind of interesting, but, you know, a dramatic situation. So now they're looking to force this thing back to Los Angeles. They got their ace on the mound, Gerrit Cole, their favorite, minus 148. Jack Flaherty, who looked decent in his first start in the series, Dodgers, plus 124. I'm going to give away my bet here in a second. But, John, do you think, doesn't have to be a bet necessarily, do you think the Dodgers end this thing tonight?
Kind of a lot of pressure on them. I'd say more pressure on them than the Yankees, right? You do not want to like blow the 3-0 lead in the World Series against the Yankees. I think Gerrit Cole on the mound, they get away with not starting Gerrit Cole on short rest, right? You do not want to go back to LA. I think you got to win this one tonight.
Yeah, it's one of these situations where it's like the Yankees, they're almost playing free mentally. It's almost like nothing to lose for them. You know, they should lose this series. They were down 3-0. You know, there's going to be some pressure, but the Dodgers, if they got to get back on that plane to Los Angeles after knowing, shit, we could have wrapped this up 2 games ago, they're going to be feeling the heat. That's a long flight back to Los Angeles. Meanwhile, if the Yankees are on that flight, they're feeling pretty damn good about themselves because they got all the momentum, right?
Especially when you start the home run with the 2-run bomb from Freddie Freeman, that kind of felt like it's over, right? Like, Freddie Freeman's just killing you this entire series, and now you're down 3-0. Now you're down 2-0 really fast. That's the Dodgers. It's like you said, I think the Yankees start playing a lot more free. It's just, hey, we're supposed to lose at this point. Where the Dodgers, especially when you spend that $1 billion and your only World Series win is that shortened year, there kind of is more pressure to like get this one, right? You got to have this one. So,
yeah, I think maybe an opportunity tonight for Aaron Judge to redeem himself. If he has a good night tonight and sends this into a game six in front of the home fans here at Yankee Stadium, maybe he could redeem himself a little bit. If he has like a huge game, I'm thinking like maybe it's like a 3-run home run late in the game and it's a tie game, or if he goes 3-for-4. Opportunity, good storyline if it does get sent back to Los Angeles. I do expect the Dodgers to close this out, though, tonight. I'm going to play it a little bit safer, though. I'm not going to take their money line. I'm going to take them to go over their team total of 3.5 runs, minus 125. I think this is a very fair price. Gerrit Cole, excuse me, isn't the dominant ace that he once was, and he hasn't been good at home this season. He had a 4.31 ERA during the regular season at Yankee Stadium. He's been unimpressive in the playoffs at home here, too. His most recent start came against the Guardians. He allowed 10 base runners in 4.1 innings of work. He allowed 9 base runners in 5 innings of work versus the Royals. He's going to be in a lot of trouble if he allows that much traffic against his Dodgers lineup. Now, look at the Dodgers against this number, 3.5 runs. They've scored at least 4 runs now in the playoffs in 8 straight games. They've been automatic up against this number. And I think the Dodgers are due for a little bit of luck here at the plate. Allow me to explain. They have a batting average in ball in play in the first 4 games in the series of just 198. League average in that category is usually around 300, and they're just 198. Despite that, they've still scored 18 runs in the first 4 games of the series. So I think potential to really break things open for LA if they can keep putting the ball in play here. So we will go over 3.5 on their team total. Now, John, let us shift gears to the NBA. I split my picks on the show yesterday. Pretty easy under in the game that I had between the Jazz. I can't even remember who they were playing last night. But that Jamal Murray, maybe I got a little bit too fancy taking the under on his team total. That one, a very high scoring game. Nets and Nuggets. Nuggets aren't looking too good to start the season, are they?
2 overtime wins against the Raptors and the Brooklyn Nets. So, no, that's not what you expect from that team. But we'll see. We'll see if they figure it out.
Indeed. Okay, John, let's get into these bets here. We each have 3. I'll get us started. I have a total. You have a prop for this game. Hawks, Wizards. Going to go over 232.5 for this one. So both of these defenses are getting absolutely cooked to open the season. These teams rank 30th and 28th in both points allowed and opponent three-point percentage. Each of these teams is in a rush to get up and down the floor. They rank 4th and 5th in pace. Now, I like that the Hawks get to the line a lot. They've been very efficient at getting to the free throw line. Some dirty defense for the Wizards, though. They're allowing a lot of free throws so far this season. And high-scoring matchups have been the norm when these teams get together. An average combined score of 243.4 in 5 matchups between them since the start of last season. Now, they just played on Monday. They combined for 240 points in that one. So I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. And it was Jazz versus Kings last night, if I recall correctly. Covering a lot of sports here, people. Give me a break.
It was Jazz Kings.
Okay, let's get into your favorite prop for this game, John.
So I went Bilal Coulibaly over 2.5 assists. I think it's plus 110 now. There's also, it's moved to like, so I bet this plus 130. This is plus 110, I believe now. There are some spots that have moved to minus 110. I actually wouldn't play it if it's minus 110. The break-even price I have is about minus 105. But the reason I was going for Coulibaly was these guys, they did just play on Monday, but this time Kyle Kuzma is out. He's not playing in the rematch. That opens up a ton of usage in this Wizards offense, like a lot. That guy is, Kuzma is someone who dominates the ball, and Coulibaly is going to play. He's going to see minutes. He was the primary defender on Trae Young. That's kind of the role they want to like mold him into, is to someone to be like a big time wing defender for them. So they're putting him on Trae Young. The thing is when that flips to the other side of the court, Trae Young is kind of getting Coulibaly in the cross match, because it just kind of makes it easier, right? Like, he's guarding me on this end, I run back, guard him on the other end. And Trae Young is significantly smaller than Coulibaly. Coulibaly is, I think he's got a 7-foot wingspan. So in terms of like driving and like just being involved in actions, the Wizards are going to want to involve Coulibaly in the offense to attack Trae Young. Trae Young's not the best defender, but from like the assist side of things, he can see over the top of him so easily. Like those passes, he should be able to see all the cutters. I think it just should open up, you know, quite a few opportunities for him to get potential assists. He played 37 minutes in the Monday's match. That was with Kuzma. So now Kuzma's also out. So 37 minutes, that's a lot for someone. So I don't need 37 minutes to establish an edge here, but you do think the minutes will be there for him if he was playing that amount of minutes alongside Kuzma. Now Kuzma's out. So should also help. I'm assuming Corey Kispert will probably get the start, and he's just a catch and shoot guy, so that helps too.
Very controversial comment in the live chat. Alec Ellis Pierce says, Halloween is the worst holiday of the year. I don't know how you get to that. Like, if you don't like Halloween, you can just ignore it. A holiday of freeloaders. What is with these guys? And what is going on? Criticizing Halloween? You just don't have to participate. Would you prefer getting a bunch of shit for free on Halloween or Valentine's Day, which is a complete and total scam, which convinces a bunch of women that their men have to spend a bunch of money on them. That's a scam. Halloween's fantastic. Okay, moving on. Nets Grizzlies. A lot of people looking forward to this one, I bet. I got a pick on the total. John has a prop. I'm going to go over 226. I love this bet tonight. So Memphis absolutely flying over totals to open the season. 235 or more combined points in all four of their games, which all four have gone over. And check out how these teams match up. Pace versus bad defense. Grizzlies are second in the NBA in pace. Nets are 28th in opponent EFG shooting percent. So there's going to be a lot of opportunities for the Grizzlies here. Real opportunity to light this one up. And then the Nets, they shoot a lot of threes, and Memphis cannot defend the perimeter. The Nets are fourth in three-point attempts. They jack up a lot of three-pointers, and Memphis 29th in three-point defense. I think we got the perfect recipe for a high-scoring game there in Memphis. So go over 226, and you have a prop for your favorite player in this one, John.
Everyone's favorite player, Ben Simmons, over. Again, another prop that has really moved. So I bet this at minus 123 this morning. I believe that was Ben Simmons, minus 123. So I bet this over 4.5 assists, minus 123. I put minus 130. I think this has gone too. I think it's minus 150 is the best price now. The break even I did have is minus 190. So there still is an edge. That's a lot of juice for some people to bet. There is some 5.5 plus 120-ish. Out there, it's pretty much the same EV as going the 4.5 minus 150. So if you want to play the plus price instead of the minus price, you can go that route too. He sat out yesterday, so then they played the Nuggets, big overtime game. Ben Simmons is not going to play the front end of the back-to-back. That's what Jordy Fernandez said. And when he was asked about what his minutes could look like today, he said he'll play good minutes. So especially coming off of an overtime game, I think he's just going to play his minutes, and they're a 12.5 point dog against the Grizzlies here. You are kind of concerned about, you know, the potential for a blowout, but I really just don't think that impacts Ben Simmons, because Ben Simmons really only plays like 25, 28 minutes. And those minutes can be like, that can come in like the first three quarters there, where if you're attacking a prop, say you want like a Jokic over, you need 36 minutes. Well, then a blowout really hurts you, because if he comes out and he always plays 28, 29 minutes, doesn't play the fourth quarter, that really tanks your props. I just think Ben Simmons, I think with how they're going to roll with this for him, is they just want him to go get his minutes. They have like a specific amount of minutes they want him to play. He's going to go run the offense, whatever that looks like, if it's a blowout or not. I just don't think it matters. So the 4.5, I think they also probably will lean on him pretty good, because I mean, back-to-back day, he didn't play yesterday, and you had the big overtime game. So I think they'll lean on him pretty good. I played 4.5. You can play 5.5 plus 120. That's probably your better, the more the bet you want to play now.
Okay, final bet for me, and then John has one more. Let's check out Spurs Thunder. Let's go under 221.5 for this one. So great start on the defensive end for each of these teams. They rank first and third in opponent EFG shooting percentage. Check them out offensively. OKC cannot shoot the three to open the season. San Antonio doesn't want to shoot the three. OKC is 29th in three-point shooting percentage. Well, the Spurs 28th in three-point attempts. And check out the Spurs here. They're not in a rush, and they've been very sloppy with the basketball. They play at one of the slower paces in the NBA. They're also turning it over at the fourth highest percentage. OKC forces the second most turnovers. So what does a lot of turnovers do? It cuts into the scoring. Hopefully we see a lot of that here tonight. So we'll take the under 221.5. Next up, Bam. Bring it home.
Bam Adebayo. If we were just, we threw it on screen here. But I was going to say, if we were just sitting in a bar in the summer and I was like, Bam Adebayo, what do you think his point total would be? What would you say?
Yeah, 17.5.
Yeah, 17.5, 18.5. That's kind of the number I would say too. So 14.5. I mean, I think that kind of just speaks for itself, right? When you're talking about Bam, this is 1 point higher than Tobias Harris tonight. So let's frame it that way. But Bam Adebayo, he's gone under his first three games here. So it's moved his total. Opening night was 16.5. Now it's down to 14.5. I think 14.5, you just have to play this on Adebayo. And the matchup also allows for it, because they're playing the Knicks. And if they're playing the Knicks, that means OG Anunoby, Mikal Bridges, they'll be guarding Tyler Hero and Jimmy Butler, which they'll be able to suffocate that part of the Heat offense. And then your matchup is Karl Anthony Towns versus Bam Adebayo. That's probably something you want to attack. And when you're also talking about the minutes for Adebayo, you know, he's a really good player. He probably should get a defensive player of the year at some point in his career. He won't, just because he doesn't have like the counting stats to make it happen. But you're going to want his defense on Towns. He's one of those few people who, you know, can play the perimeter and guard Towns and take that away from him. So just from like the minutes perspective, you really think the minutes will be there for him because of the defensive matchup as well. 14.5, I'm going over. I think that's too low for Bam Adebayo.
Okay, John, we'll throw a question at you from Janice here in the live chat. Any thoughts on Anthony Davis MVP or defensive player of the year with how Redick is running the offense through him and Lakers looking good for the first few games? I see Davis at 15-1 to win the MVP right now. Of course, the concern with Anthony Davis is always going to be, can he stay healthy? But what do you think of Davis, what we've seen so far this season and those odds, 15-1?
Yeah, I'll throw a different bet at you. I don't know if it's still there. I saw it yesterday. I saw first team all NBA plus 850. So that would be five spots versus one for MVP.
Ooh, okay.
I feel like that would probably be the stronger bet. I don't know if you can find it where you're located. That was the number I saw yesterday. I almost did bet on it, to be honest. I was looking pretty closely at it. I think that's the one. MVP, 15-1. I don't know. If you're a Lakers fan, I'd probably bet it. Like, can I put it that way?
9-1 to win defensive player of the year.
Yeah, defensive player of the year. Not 9-1 either. I think Wembanyama, I feel like that is Wembanyama's market until Wembanyama kind of flirts with that 65 game threshold and starts to look like he might be eliminated from it. Then I'd probably start to jump in on those other defensive player of the year people. But in terms of the Lakers, the other guy, I did place a most improved bet on Austin Reeves. If you're a Lakers fan, I don't know where it's at now. It was at BetMGM on the weekend. I bet 150-1 was the number. And I know it did move to 80 because I think, you know, Anthony Davis's usage is up. I also feel like Reeves might take over that second spot from LeBron James. I feel like LeBron James kind of is in that point in his career. And if you're watching them, like I was watching the Phoenix Suns game yesterday, I didn't really even notice LeBron too much, right? So I feel like they are trying to take that away from LeBron and lighten his workload. I feel like Reeves could step up into that second score. So that's something to look at too.
Is Bronny expected to see minutes tonight in Cleveland, like a homecoming?
Yes.
Type of? Okay. Yeah. I've thought about this, John, and yeah. I've been on the fence about the whole Bronny thing a little bit. Like one side, okay, yeah, it's a very cool story. You know, we've never seen anything like this. Ken Griffey Jr. Then the other thing is, well, you know, he's not that good of a player. I've settled on the fact that I think it's stupid now. It's fake. Yeah. It's phony. It's overly orchestrated. Who cares? He's getting into the game not to help the team in any way. It's simply to appease LeBron and LeBron's legacy. So I'm on that side of the fence with this now. I was happy to hear, though, he is going to be sent down to the developmental league, though, right? So that makes sense, at least.
Yeah, after the road trip, I think they said. So they're in Cleveland tonight. I think they have a five-game road trip. I think after the road trip, they said he's going to the G League. So that's the path that they should take. I will say, props to J.J. Redick. I feel like he's done a really good job of navigating a situation that could be pretty tough. And, like, even answering the questions and what he says about Bronny and making it feel – for a guy who's never coached before and like done pressers, I mean, obviously had a podcast and stuff. I think he's done a fantastic job of answering the questions and like making this work type thing, not losing the locker room over it too.
Yeah. Redick's done a great job. You know, there's not many examples of guys that have no head coaching experience. Then they become a head coach and then they're great. And who knows, 2 weeks from now, we might be talking about how JJ Redick sucks, but you know, Steve Kerr would be the example of a guy. I know he worked in the front office for the Phoenix Suns, and then he did some broadcasting and stuff as well. And he took a job. But you often see, like, these former players get thrown into these spots as head coach, and it doesn't work out very well at all.
I was thinking about this when you're talking about the Dolphins and, like, Mike McDaniel and Brian Flores, like, the two differences. Like, they're, like, polar opposites. I feel like J.J. Redick's going to be successful because he can – it feels like he does both. Like, he can go backwards hat, have a glass of wine, and break down film with you. Yeah. And then the other night, LeBron let the shot clock run out on one play, and he yelled at him to shoot the effing ball, and it was caught on camera. So I feel like
you got to hold these guys accountable.
So
yeah, Exactly. Yeah, I like it. Yeah, so he could have a lot of success. Now, before we go, I was very distracted by this comment from Alec Ellis Pierce, who said Halloween is the worst holiday of the year. Now, I totally disagree with that, but what is the worst holiday of the year? Is there one? Like, often a holiday will be associated with gifts. You often will get a day off from work. Sometimes New Year's Day feels kind of lame. Like, you know, you just had a bit at the end of the break of the holiday, no stores are open. You're kind of looking to get back into your routine. Does anything stand out to you as a bad holiday necessarily, John?
I almost jumped on the Valentine's Day thing when you said it, but it feels like a trap. Not sure how much I want to say about that holiday.
Well, it often leads to some romance later in the evening, if you know.
Like right near the Super Bowl, too. It's right near the Super Bowl, too. It's not a great timing if you're a better and a guy and you're trying to plan something for Valentine's Day and you're also trying to bet on Super Bowl props. It kind of conflicts, but I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, if you cheeseburger Eddie says here, New Year's sucks once you hit 30. Yeah, if we're talking New Year's Eve sucks after you are married and you have children. And I remember going out and you are, you know, you're out all hours of the night and you're trying to get a taxi home and it takes forever and everything's overpriced and there's lineups. And yeah, New Year's Eve is bullshit. So if you want to put New Year's Eve into the holiday category, I would probably put that number one on my worst holiday rankings. There's not a lot of bad holidays. So Valentine's Day, Valentine isn't a holiday.
True. We don't get it all.
It's like Halloween. Could you imagine if you got Valentine's Day off work? A stat holiday? Go have sex all day. We're going to give you the day off work. Okay. We should probably end at that. We will recap the bets here. Dodgers team total over 3.5. Hawks, Wizards, over 32.5. Nets, Grizzlies, over 26. Spurs, Thunder, under 221 are my best bets for the night. What are we looking at, John?
Bilal Coulibaly, over 2.5 assists, plus 110-ish was the one best number. Ben Simmons, over 4.5 assists. Like I said, you can go to the 5.5 plus 120. And Bam Adebayo, over 14.5 points.
Indeed. Okay. We will leave it at that for today. We're coming right back at you guys tomorrow. Jake Butt will be by for his weekly appearance to talk all things college football, a little NFL there as well, Thursday night football. Not the best looking game maybe, but obviously there's always going to be a ton of drama whenever the New York Jets are playing. They're hosting the Houston Texans. We're going to be all over that. We're going to recap whatever happens tonight in Major League Baseball. Maybe it'll be the end of the season. Maybe we're moving on to a game 6 here on Friday. And of course, our usual handful of picks in the NBA. So thank you to both of my guests for joining today. Thank you to producer Mick, doing a fantastic job. Thank you to BetMGM for sponsoring the show. Thank you to all the viewers for tuning in. Best of luck with your bets tonight. And we will catch you guys again tomorrow. Woo!